we go. It's a Getaway Friday here on WGH Talk. Friday the 13th. Hey, Triskaidekaphobia Day. 2026. Triskaidekaphobia. Fear of 13. The number 13.
I was born on Friday the 13th.
Were you?
Are you afraid of me, Scott?
No. I don't have that fear. I've never actually met anybody who had it. But I know buildings don't have a 13th floor. There's a lot of other things where 13 is not kosher with people.
File 13,
you're right, file 13. And 13 is an unlucky number if you're betting, or I know in the horse racing world, they don't like number 13, they don't put it in there. But yeah, Friday the 13th, here we are. So, Pastor, good to have you back in studio. How are things?
I'm great, how are you?
Doing well.
Good. Yeah, it's I see some warm weather coming. And, you know, I'm so glad that this rain looks like it's going south of us, because with the snow melting, if we had the rain on top of it, this ground would be soup.
Yeah, it would be. You know what, though? It's so nice that I'm starting to see some blacktop and some green outside again. I do like that. It's been a while.
Yeah, me too. I mean, we see some brown, too. But, yep. You know, it's going to come back, and I'm excited for it. Well, what are we going to talk about today? I think I mentioned what we're going to talk about today. About
understanding
other people.
Other people when you disagree, but understanding their position.
And the other one is, don't spout everything you hear.
Oh, that's true.
Because I think that a lot of the angst and the argument that we see between different groups in our country right now are because they hear something and they believe it. They see something and believe it. And you know what really scares me, Scott, is that some of this stuff that we're seeing is AI generated.
Oh, yes.
Completely. Like pictures of Biden next to people that he was never next to, pictures of Trump next to people he was never next to. And it looks so real, you just believe it. And they throw a caption under it. Really, you always have to, I just tell people to be very cautious. You know, it's interesting. We had a caller in one day. And he said that Joe Biden was the pedophile in chief. Not really. He didn't say that. He said that Donald Trump was the pedophile in chief. And I remember that comment, and I thought to myself, so I got to thinking about this, and I got to thinking about Donald Trump, and I got to thinking about Joe Biden and others, and I thought, you know what? There is actually zero hard evidence that either one of those men ever acted in any way with any way being a pedophile. Now, I've seen pictures of Biden and accusations. Baloney. I believe that. I see the same thing. But we repeat it and we say it. And it's because we see it. And we don't even stop to say, well, why would they do that? Why would they post that? Could you imagine if some of the people that came on and said, well, listen, this, you know, what if somebody falsely accused them? You know, maybe they'd know how it felt to be falsely, but there's so much of it going on, and it's so vicious.
Oh, it's awful. I mean, we just had Ayers Ratliff do his first interview after his not guilty verdict in here, and he talked about how the prosecution had no DNA evidence, but this sitting councilman was accused of underage rape.
I remember.
And had to live with that for 2 years. So, I mean, and out of his own words, I mean, that's a very powerful interview to listen to hear him talk about what the 2 years has been like.
Had been done to him.
Yes.
I knew a school teacher several years ago when my kids were in school, and he was a very well-loved school teacher in middle school. And these two girls accused him of doing something inappropriate in the locker room with them. All over the news, he had to leave teaching. He went to, I think he ended up bagging groceries some there for quite a while. But it came out later that both of these girls were angry at him for a grade that he had given them for not taking a test for health and phys ed or something. They made the whole thing up. Destroy this man. And so I guess what I'm saying is I don't want to go down that, because I want to talk about something completely different today. I'm saying, pay attention to what you repeat, and that goes on politically and socially on both sides of the aisle. Pay attention to what you repeat. don't jump on board just because you think you should. You know, I knew a girl, to give you show you some of the false stuff that we see, not only in the AI, but I know a girl, and I will not tell you her name, but I can be, I'm telling you the honest truth. I know of a young lady. I know her name. I know her family. I know everything about her. For the last, I'm tired, bad with dates now. It's been a long time. I would say for the last 12 to 14 years, maybe, she has been a paid protester. That's what she does for a living. And I remember when I first heard about this, I thought, seriously? But then I found out she makes good money. And I actually saw her on TV one day, climbing over the top of a desk of an official in where they came in and were protesting very hard and getting a little and in talking to family members, they said that the more that she can be animated and get camera attention, the more money she makes. And she has been doing this now for years. And that is her job, Scott. But when you watch TV, you think, man, these people are really charged up. Now, granted, I'm sure there's some real protesters. But there's, why aren't people just saying enough is enough of, and I don't care which side of the aisle it's on.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting, you know, we have listeners out here commenting right now. Well, one of our listeners, Phil, out there, is talking about Ayers and saying if he can be indicted and tried, you know, look what can happen to a lot of people out there. You can make an accusation against anybody.
Absolutely. I knew of a lady one time that was very falsely accused. And she was a lady of means, but it was literally a clerical error where her name got mixed up with someone else's, ended up on a warrant. They arrested her at work. They took her to jail. And thank God she had enough connection. And when she could finally talk to family after hours, they contacted an attorney, and the next morning, she had stayed there all night. She was released, and it was, the mistake was found, and blah, blah, blah. And I couldn't help but think about that when I heard that, of what if you were a young lady that the same thing happened to, and you had two children, you were a single mom, and you were living week to week, and had no access to an attorney, had no family to help you, and had two kids. They would have taken the kids, they would have taken them into social services, would have picked them up and taken them. Your arraignment may have taken 2 weeks. You'd have sat in jail. You'd have lost your job. Think about that. These things actually happen.
Well, that's why accusations are very interesting. You know, most of the time, if you actually go to the person and you say, what happened, they'll tell you. Mm-hmm. You know, they really will. Now, you can say that they're lying to you, but I think that's sort of a cop-out. If you go to them and say, what's this all about?
What really happened?
They'll tell you. And a lot of times, it's not nearly what you think it is.
And it's so sad that it happens. You know, we were talking, Scott and I were talking earlier, and it's one of the things I'd like to talk about today, is that the conversation in this country, I don't care whether it's, I hate to use the word political, but so much surrounds politics today. You know, we're supposed to be telling the politicians what to do. And we're supposed to be, and politicians are passing off the buck to experts. You know how much stuff we're doing today because somebody said we had to do it, and it was never voted on by the people that were supposed to be running the country, which is us. But anyway, when I look at this, I think, why can't we just sit down and say that, Scott, you and I have a total disagreement on, let's just pick a topic. How about, dispersion of social funds, welfare funds. Who should get it, who shouldn't? And we're completely on different sides of that coin. Wouldn't it be interesting if we sat down and you honestly explained to me exactly why you feel the way you do without any anger, without any throwing accusations, just talk, just playing, this is how I feel and this is why I feel that way. And then I do the same thing and say, okay, well, here's where I am and here's where I am. What can we do to solve the problem of where we are and maybe come to an agreement between us that we can both live with it? and walk away respecting one another for the other one's opinion, and not calling them a hater, not calling them a, you know, I get so tired of these people that are really supposed to be professionals. In whether they're sitting in a congressional seat or whatever, that just get up and slam the nastiest words and accusations of people, calling them names. I mean, weren't we taught not to do that in first grade?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it's very interesting. This comes up to a personal story recently, and I don't think people will know the background on this. But recently, I was asked to help make an introduction for somebody, and it was a political introduction.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I can do that. That's about the extent of anything I'll do politically, but I'll make an introduction for somebody. If you want to meet somebody, I'll do that. That I know. So I did that. And the two people got along very, very well. Now, I was not around them. They went off to dinner. I was not around that. I did not go to dinner with them. They did their thing. Blah, 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 blah. Then I ran into the person a week later that I do know. And they said, what did you think of that person? I didn't particularly like them. It had nothing to do with their politics, because honestly, I don't know what they stood for. I know what political party they were, but I don't know what they stood for. I just did not. The person gave me a bad feeling when I was around them.
And you pay attention to that.
And I pay attention to that. And I said, I don't know them well, obviously, but I did not like how they behaved when I was around them. And this person did not like that at all. So all of a sudden, my friend, let's say, not because of their political affiliation, was angry at me because of their political affiliation with this person. So that's an interesting, and that's an absolutely true story.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, a couple weeks ago, I gave a message from the pulpit because there's so much uproar and protesting and stuff going on in this country. And I thought, well, you know what? I've got to look at, I'm a pastor, right? I got to look what the Bible says about this. I mean, that's in that where
you'd
I
you'd want to go.
That's where I'd want to go. So I looked it up. And in every instance that I could find overall, basically, any time that there was rebellion in the Bible, it is spoke of in a negative sense. You're not to rebel. Now, there's a difference between standing up for what's right and trying to separate yourself. For instance, if someone's breaking in your house, you stand up for them. Someone's raiding your town, you understand what I mean. But I'm talking about where people just say, I'm going to rebel against this. If you take a good example would be, if you look at, and this is historically accurate too, if you look at the Jewish slavery in Egypt. We're going back way down, way back there now. The Jewish slavery in Egypt. One thing that the Jews always did was they were always in subject to Egypt. There was never an open rebellion. What they did do at one point was they fled. Very similar to the founders of this country that literally fled England. And then England comes behind and says, well, being that we consider you still English citizens, we're going to take this, and that led to what we ended up with. But the point is, open rebellion, isn't something that accomplishes much. What accomplishes much is to sit down and discuss what you're doing, why you're doing, and come to an agreement. There's so many examples I know in the Old Testament of when different, we'll say Old Testament prophets or different people would sit down with someone, maybe a king or someone of that nature, and say, okay, here's what we got. And they'd walk away with a conclusion. You know, maybe they'd walk away with 1,000 sheep, 50 goats, and a piece of land, but that's what they did. They sat down and they agreed, like, from this day forward, you'll see it all through there, you know, from this day forward, we will not, you know, lay a hand on you, and you won't lay a hand on us, and all those things. That's how things work, and I don't understand why. Look, if our politicians are not going to wear big enough pants, to sit down and talk to each other in a civil manner and present obvious conclusions. I'll give you a good example. Right now, 70% of the Democrats are, at least, are on board with voter ID. And I don't want to hear about anybody. This is, I'm not talking about who agrees with what right here. What I'm saying is, with that being said, when they go to a vote, you would think that that would pass. But it doesn't pass because there's so much anger and everything going on in other areas that we're going to fight about this even though I feel different over here. And I think that if we as citizens could say, you know what, if they're not going to do it, we are. We're going to be civil. We're going to start having and you're not going to raise us to a fever pitch to where we're out there in the street doing something wrong. I heard something interesting that I was listening to the other day, and it was an interview with a man that was he was on the news. He was I call them news magazine shows, I guess, best way to put it. They're not exactly true reporters. But this man was not a religious person whatsoever. Matter of fact, he didn't even like religious people. But he was talking about when Charlie Kirk was assassinated. And he said, wow. He said, I saw something that just set me back in my seat. He said, Charlie Kirk was assassinated. And no buildings were burnt. No mobs in the street. Nobody got attacked and hurt because they looked like the guy that could be him. There was no city-to-city protests. He said, why in the world can't more people handle it that way? And he was right. He said he was really taken back by that and impressed. Why is it that as many followers as he had, why is it? Because that's not what they do. And the point is that we all should be in that place where that's not what we do. Look, if you go into, you know, everyone talks about, you know, what happened in Minnesota with the welfare fraud. Huge. You know, the home care fraud, all that. Why can't we just sit down and agree on Republicans, Democrats, Independents, everyone say, wow, this can't happen again. This really happened. You know, this group over here that does prosecution, let them deal with who was at the bottom of this and getting all that out. And if anybody was a criminal, go charge them, do whatever. But let's decide as a group here that, wow, this was really crazy and it cost billions of dollars to the state. And let's make sure that the taxpayers don't get ripped off again and see what we can do to make this situation run a little more smoothly in the way that it should. Instead of immediately it became a race issue. I mean, instantly. It was not a race issue. It was a crime issue. And that's where it should have been looked at. Whether or not one group was of a particular race or not really didn't matter. You know, we're Americans. You know, and I look at, we should be way past, think about something, okay? Kids in school, from the time they're little, they go to school, and we celebrate something for white people, we celebrate something for black people, Black History Month, black founders, white this, white that. Then we have Asian American groups. And then as these kids are growing up, they realize they're being taught subconsciously and consciously that we're all so different and we have our own groups. And then all of a sudden they become teenagers and adults and are told we're all the same and should act that way. We programmed them differently. The truth of the matter is we are all, America is a melting pot of everyone. We should have a day that we should celebrate everybody. And you know, like for instance, how about we just have History Month, where we talk about all the contributors to history. Black history, white history, Asian history, American Indian history. How about that? They contributed. They were part of the United States, huge part of this country. And rather than, you know, if we had a day for every people group, a month. They all have a different month, and we'd be short some, and somebody would be mad and screaming they didn't get one. So the point is, how about just American History Day, or how about American History Month or 2 months, and celebrate all the people that in black history that did wonderful things, and white history, and Indian history. The point is, we're teaching people to divide and then asking them not to. Every time an issue comes up in politics, what happens? We scream race every time. And yeah, do we have racial issues in this country? You better believe, but I believe they're being fostered. I don't think that we're teaching unity from the time people are young. We're teaching it through what they see around them.
Well, I think we're going to find out this year in Ohio if there is or there isn't. Because you've got a very strong gubernatorial candidate in Vivek Ramaswamy for the Republican Party. And Jim Renacci, who ran for governor last time, big deal in the Republican Party, congressman, came on this show a month ago and said, I've talked to Vivek, and I told him, being of the Hindu religion is going to be a problem with the Republican Party and the places you need to win in this state. And if Vivek Ramaswamy does not win this election, I think people are going to have to look at that and say, why didn't he win? Mm-hmm. And is that racism? And I think that's what the racism that most people are talking about comes to. It's not so much about what is happening on a daily basis. It's that, I say this all the time, in Ohio, we've never had a non-white governor. We've never had a female governor who was elected. In Marion, we've never had a non-white mayor. We've never had a female mayor. Now, we're talking more
there's
than
been
a...
There's been some good African-Americans run.
Absolutely.
Too.
And good women who have ran for these offices. So why aren't they elected? You think in over a century...
That's race.
Right.
But with Ramaswamy, I think that the thing... And this bothers me, too. Part of it is... People are concerned about him bringing his religion into his politics in the state and being Hindu and some of the Hindu. And I see
and that's
that.
His own party saying it.
Oh, I'm agreeing.
Right.
But here's my thing. I remember that during when Donald Trump was running the first time, I heard. Obviously, I'm around a lot of Christian people. Can you imagine that? I heard someone Christian saying, "You know what? I'm going to sit out this time. I can't vote for the other side." But there's no way that I can vote for Donald Trump because I know too much about his past and where he's been and what kind of person he is. And I thought, look, when we're voting for someone in office to run our country, first of all, we're not voting for the Pope. We're not voting for a pastor. We're not voting for a church leader. We're voting for someone that we feel would do the best job at running our country and that supports the values that we personally believe in. Now, if Vivek Ramaswamy comes along and he supports all the values that I believe in, but he happens to be a Hindu, I'm not going to let someone else win that doesn't support my values. How stupid is that?
Well, and that's what's interesting. I mean, a guy like Joe Blystone, who in the last gubernatorial Republican primary won Wyandotte County, won Morrow County, has made it his career bashing Vivek Ramaswamy on Facebook. Now, is that because he
doesn't win?
Yeah, but is it because he doesn't like Ramaswamy? Is it because
he thinks it's a politically expedient to do?
But how does it help him at this point?
In his mind, he thinks it does, and it doesn't.
Right. So
I knew that Blystone was unelectable from the get-go. He was just too radical.
But at the top, does it have anything to do with what Renacci's saying? Does it have anything to do with race?
No.
I don't. I
really don't think so. Do you remember Black? What was his last name? Ken.
Oh, Blackwell.
Thank you,
Ken Blackwell.
Blackwell.
Yeah.
Ken Black, I love that guy. I think he was one of the most decent politicians we've had in a long time. He could not get the party to endorse him. If you remember when he ran for governor, they were right. They just wouldn't get on board with him, and that was race. I'm sorry, I believe that was race, and they didn't think they could. And how sad is that? See, here's the thing. I think that if you go back 30 years ago in this country, there was less racism than there is now. I mean, I remember I lived through it, and I didn't hear about it as much. There wasn't as much people, you know, it wasn't such a political hot-button issue. And honestly, sadly enough, Americans, I want you to hear this right now, 90% of the stuff you're hearing out there, the race baiting, the things about immigrants and everything else, is about votes. Whether you believe it or not, it's about who's going to get the votes. And it's all about votes. And how sad that is, because it should be about substance. I've got a different opinion than probably a lot of people. But some people would like my opinion on the whole, on the whole Latino. On the whole,
no.
Had a little visit. We almost got flowers, Scott.
We did. Oh, did we?
we almost did.
Oh,
but,
my goodness.
But anyway,
we should, hold on.
On this immigration thing, this is my take on it, and I can be corrected. I'm right. Okay, but I'd say I'm having this conversation. How are we doing on time, okay?
Oh, we're doing great.
We're great. So, okay, here's how I feel about it. We've got all these people that flooded the country. We know they did. They're all over the place. You know, they came in. We might as well have had been welcoming them in with big signs as they were coming, you know, billboards. But the point is, they're here. Okay, so they're here. So we do know there are a lot of criminals around. With that, because that's obvious. There's going to be a percentage of people that come over the border, like any, you know, they're going to be. So I say that we say, okay, here's the plan. Anyone that is not a criminal, that does not have a criminal record, we'll give you 60 days, to sign up as a path towards citizenship, but there's some conditions with that. You have to make every attempt to be gainfully employed. We have to know where you're at. You have to check in with someone very similar to a probation officer, but you know what I mean. We would call them a naturalization officer to let them know, I'm still here, I'm working, or, you know, here's where I am, so we can keep track of you. And there's going to be a step process that you can work towards citizenship. Now, on the flip side of that, everything else is, part of that condition is, you cannot harbor known felons. Okay? States, if you want us to do this, you got to let us go in and help us take the bad people out of your. We're going to let all the people that want to work and raise a family and are contributing to this country, you're going to have a way that you can stay, but we want the bad people out. And I think that, to me, that's a common sense approach. And I wish more people would look at a common sense approach. Like right now, for instance, so many of our industries have people working that, yeah, they came here. I know they came here illegally. But I got to tell you something. If I lived in Mexico and there was a good chance that somebody was going to snatch up my beautiful 14-year-old daughter and put her in a sex trade, I'd be running north too. You know what I mean? But now, at the same time, Mexico has to decide they're going to do some things too. Do you realize that Mexico and South America have more natural resources than we do? They have everything capable of making them an unbelievable, productive country. But the people, out of fear of the cartels and fear of their government, have sat back and let it turn into what it's turned into. And so they fled their country. They shouldn't be fleeing their country. We should be wanting to go there because it's so nice. And that's up to the people. And that's why I say, like in this country, we have to decide that we are going to do what's right. We're going to come together. We're going to sit at a table. We're going to quit the name calling. I mean, I just think it's disgusting on both sides. I get tired of it. I get tired of the snips. You know, let's see Congress working together, literally working together to say, what can we do to make things better for Americans? Quit grabbing all these issues and lying about them on both sides. Well, the Republicans want to do this, and they're wanting to take us back to this date and be a Hitler and this. And then on the other side, they're saying, well, look at them. They want us to do this and do that. And you know, if you vote for them, everyone's going to die in the streets. And you know, it's just ridiculous. And I think that if they would come together and actually sit and talk, and yeah, we're going to have different viewpoints. But I bet that our voter turnout would go up.
But you see, we're not allowed to be pragmatic. That's the problem. Because if you're pragmatic, then people will say you're doing things that you don't really mean, that you don't really believe in.
And so,
we're doing that right now in Ohio with Governor DeWine, with the Haitian issue in Springfield. Governor DeWine said last week and has said many times that he believes they should stay. We do not have the workforce to take over there. It's good for the state. It's going to hurt the economy if you do this. I think this is a bad idea. And his wife, Fran DeWine, who never speaks up politically, find a political statement that she has made in his 8 years. She said, I'm glad that they're staying. I'm glad the federal judge is going to let them stay, extended their temporary visas. And DeWine has said things are worse in Haiti now than they were then.
Right.
Why would we send them back? Just try to send a Western Union to Haiti right now. They won't even accept it right now.
Don't go into Haiti anymore. They are going all the time.
Right. So whether Governor DeWine thinks that that's right or wrong, he's doing the pragmatic thing as a governor, saying, I think they should stay. I think this is the right thing to do for Ohio. And who is attacking him? The Ohio Congress. The man running for governor in Ohio, who's the Republican. They're the ones attacking him because it says, well,
it seems to them to be more politically expedient to do what they're doing because they think the majority of the party will agree with them.
Right. Well, they've even come up with a name. Oh, he's a rhino.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
Republican in name only.
Right. Well,
and they said that about DeWine.
Right.
Well, here's the thing, then. That's exactly what I'm talking about. My viewpoint that I just gave you on what we should do with immigrants would not set well with a majority of the party, probably. But I think it's because they haven't really sat back and thought about it. They just say, they're here illegally, get them out. And, you know, I understand we have to have a rule of law. We cannot function in this country without a hard, fast rule of law. But sometimes what happens is, just like the president gives pardons to people that committed a crime and says, you know what, I don't want to see you spend the next 60 years in jail. You'd be more of a productive person not to. How about pardoning these people and saying, look, I just said that we set parameters with it, same as the people in Springfield. Now, part of the problem in Springfield is this. Even though they're an active part of Springfield, they are draining the services in Springfield, that extra glut of people. So what do? We go in and say, okay, here's the problem. The majority of you want you to stay. Okay, you're going to stay. But let's sit down now and figure out how can these people stay and not drain the system. How about, just to throw them out there, whatever benefits they're getting, they're going to get a third of those benefits and gain them each year until the system adjusts to it. Okay? You want to be here, we're going to let you stay. You can work towards being a wonderful American in this country and earn and have every right that an American has. But just because our social system and our hospitals and everything else are drained right now, you're not going to get the full services, and we're going to gradually build up the services and get them to the point that if you need them, you'll be there. Now that was just me sitting here talking, okay? I'm not a CEO and I'm not on a board at some hospital or county association or welfare association. I'm just saying, to me, that sounds like a common sense thing. And as Americans, we have common sense, and we can sit down and do that. And we've got to start telling our politicians, we're not tolerating this stupidity anymore. You know, first of all, yes, we are a melting pot. And most people came here for opportunity. So why can't we take the people that came here for opportunity, give them opportunity, and the people that came here for the wrong reasons, boot them out?
Well, I think it's the age-old problem is that why do the people who hire the illegal immigrants never get in trouble?
Easy. Because we need them in the economy.
Right. So if that truly is the problem, and you want to solve this problem, then you need to find those people as well.
You need to arrest those people and their company and arrest those people, and one of two things is going to happen. I'll tell you what it is. Either it's going to scare them to death and all these people aren't going to have jobs, so they're going to leave. first of all, we can't just put them on the system if they don't have a job. You know, if they don't have a job, they either they make money working or they don't. You can't put them in the system, or you'll end up with what you ended up in Minnesota with 90% of the Somali population on welfare. You know, they don't have jobs, they just go get on welfare. And we can't have that either. But the other thing that could happen is, say you, I'm going to pick on you guys over there at the potato chip place here in town, but they're not hiring illegals, but just say that they were. And they went in and they said, you know what, we're arresting the executives in this country or in this company and all this stuff. Can I tell you that the political pressure on our politicians would be to such, including the Republican Party, would be such that they would say, wait a minute, we got to figure out a way for these people to stay.
Well,
that's exactly what they do, because their money and their support is coming from these companies that are hiring illegals.
Well, the thing about it is, I mean, and
all about
they're,
the money.
They're not in business here anymore, so we can say this, but Silver Line Windows, when they were in business here, it was well known by anybody who worked there, and if you knew anybody who worked there,
they hired
heavily illegal immigrants, so heavily that Fair Park School, which was still there at the time, had to get a bilingual person to work in the school because they had so many Latino children.
We have that at Elgin.
Right. But, I mean, this was the direct cause and effect of it,
right,
because that's where they were living,
right,
in the Fair Park area. And you're telling me the police chief didn't know that at the time?
Well, everyone knew it.
Everybody. But how many people got arrested?
Nobody.
How many people were charged who ran Silver Line?
No one. Right. That's my point, though.
And even when they did get raided, because they did at the end.
Nobody got in trouble.
Well, who got arrested?
That's my whole point. If they were under the thumb of being arrested, those very people that run those companies, the people, the stockholders, the investors, and everyone, will be putting pressure on the government saying, hey, we got to do something because we got to keep these people. And we're not going to be interested because we're trying to make a profit. So because of the fact, you know why they're not arrested, and so do I. Right? Well, why are they not being arrested, Scott?
Money.
Money. You follow the money. This whole thing comes back to money. And how sad is it? Because I want to tell you honestly, other than, you know, the taxation on tea, you know, our big problem with England, one of the huge ones, was taxation without representation. It was money. But it was way beyond money. There was so much socially going on, too, and the way that colonists were being treated. But money should not be our bottom line. The right thing should be our bottom line.
Unfortunately, money is.
But it shouldn't be, Scott.
It shouldn't be. But the problem is...
But it is with people.
Right, but you know what? Even non-politically, that's how we use... That's how we show people who's boss is money. I mean, non-politically. I mean, we've talked about this. When it comes to, I don't like that show. Instead of turning off that show now, people write the sponsors. And you have a right to do that. It's America. You can do it. But you're trying to hit them in the pocketbook because that will hurt them. So it comes down to money. And that's not even political a lot of times. That's a show that maybe you feel is being provocative. Maybe they're tackling subjects you don't like.
Well, they say hit them where it hurts.
Right.
That's
right.
Money.
But it's money. And that's why you hit the politicians, though.
If suddenly the Democratic Party was viewed as the party that would not give benefits to people on welfare and would fight those benefits, you would see the electorate switch overnight, because people that believe that they're going to continue getting more and more benefits are going to keep voting for the party that they think gives to them if they vote. And that's what they're going to do.
But I'm glad you brought that up, because this is a true story this week. Isn't it interesting, though, let's say that happened, and it did happen this week on one issue, and I want to bring that up in a second. But, okay, let's say a Democrat all of a sudden doesn't want to go with the social service anymore and feels more the way the Republican does. Now, how do they get labeled immediately? They get labeled, well, you're doing that to get elected.
Right.
And then it becomes, Well, it's because you don't need the money. And we saw that this week with Amy Acton. Amy Acton gave a speech in Columbus on Medicaid, and she went completely in the opposite direction of the Democratic Party, and she said, "I believe Medicaid should have work requirements," which has been an issue for the Republican Party for years. And the Democrats have always fought that tooth and nail. Amy Acton said, "I'm for work requirements." And immediately, the party came at her, the Democratic Party, and said, "What are you doing?" So, and then they just say, "Well, you're just trying to get elected. You're trying to come to the center."
But she tried to say what she thought should be done.
She tried to say what she
and
thought should be
point,
done.
That's the point. But see, we got to stay the course. Nothing comes easy. Nothing ever comes easy. And you have to stay the course, even if you're going to get shot down. Trust me, do you think that what I preach from the pulpit that everybody agrees with me on in this country? No. I'm not changing my message because I'm convicted on what I believe. I mean, I believe what I say in that pulpit, I believe in my heart. It's not just something I'm saying to, and that's the problem with a lot of churches today. There are so many churches that are just telling people what they want to hear to get numbers in, to generate money. I can't see that. I have to be honest, you know, I believe that God holds me accountable for what I do. And I think that as people, if we're willing to be, to toe the line, to stand for what we believe and say, you know what, regardless of the outcome, this is where I believe, man, it would be a better place to live.
But unfortunately, the problem is, and I think more people should do that, the problem does become money in the end, because any place that pays your salary eventually dictates what you say. Now, you can always quit, or you can wait around and be fired.
Can you afford to quit?
Well, can you afford to quit? And I mean, right now, again, and I don't know what's going on with Wexner at OSU. Whatever will be, will be. He'll have his day in
That's
court.
That's an interesting
right.
one.
But I'll
a
tell
lot
you
of
what.
Money's been spread around there.
But here's Mr. Money. Here's Mr. Name on Buildings. Now, he's in the ringer in two situations right now with the Epstein and the OSU Strauss scandal. But his name's not coming off the buildings. He's not even been taken off the board of Ohio State yet. Now, why is that?
On the way in
now,
here
why
that
is that?
About this, and I forgot about it. I'll tell you why. It's the money.
The money.
And the thing is, do you think OSU is going to give back any of that money because it was labeled dirty money? But I want to tell you something. If he was somebody else.
That's right.
They'd say, you give the money back, you are associating with them, you're just as bad, blah, blah, blah. Les Wexner, a lot of people have. Now, I got to be honest with you. I don't know the truth on Les Wexner. He may be innocent as innocent goes. He may be, you know, he's done an awful lot of good thing with foundations, and, you know, so much has been done good in his name. And I'll be honest with you, I pray that's the case. I really do. But I'm with you, Scott. I think that you know, if it does come out the other way, oh, she's not going to. They are talking about possible name removals, but I don't know if they can get away with that.
But do you think if he was a minor member on the board and not a big donor that he'd still have his seat right now?
Oh, no.
Right. Money.
No, it's money. Fine. It's money.
And that's the problem. You can speak your mind. Nobody's going to stop you from speaking your mind. You have the ability to do that, but there will be consequences.
The hard thing is we not only want money, but we're afraid of money. Because we're afraid of money, people that have money and what they can do to us. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
They have more means.
Well, they can tie things up longer. They can come at you with all kinds of things. It's a sad, sad commentary on free speech in this country, that money dictates it. You know, now I assume if you are a true friend of Lex Wexner, you probably do like him, and you probably are giving him the benefit of the doubt.
And you probably
right
know
now.
The truth.
And you probably know the truth. But it's not dictated by money. You're his friend.
Right.
That's something different. But other people, it's a friend thing. It's a money thing. And that's the problem. If you are just an OSU, if you are the president of OSU now, what's his name? Ted something.
I forget.
Yeah, but if you are the president of OSU, you are not going to speak on this right now, because if he's innocent, you want him to stay as your biggest donor, and if he's guilty, you probably still don't want his money to go away. So you can't say anything, Ted Carter, but that's not because he's friends with him. That's because of the money. Now, Gordon Gee, I believe, is friends with him. And I believe Gordon Gee has made the comments he's made because he's known him 30 years. So I don't think that's money anymore, because Gee's not the president anymore, and it wouldn't hurt him anyway.
You know, a lot of the thing, I want people to understand from what, you know, and I do, and I challenge you, when you hear things about the economy and whatnot, you know, go to the Department of Labor. All this stuff's available. You can look up actual numbers. You don't always have to believe what you're told. But I will say this, here's the way Epstein operated. He got you to his island. He gets something on you. It's an age-old thing. He would get something on you, and now he could get in with you financially, and he always had something to hang over your head. That's how he functioned, whether it was an actor, an actress, whoever it was. And that's where he generated money. You know, we now know this about each other. Here's a business deal, and yeah, you better get, that's how he operated. And I really think that most of the people did not go to Epstein Island looking for something sick to do. It was a beautiful place. There's one fella I know that was there, took his family there for a family weekend, and had a wonderful time. The point is, just because you were at Epstein's does not always mean that you went there for the wrong intentions.
No, and I think one of the reasons he's really getting it in the last few days, Wexner, is because when the paperwork came back unredacted, the Epstein files, he's named as a co-conspirator, not just
somebody
who's in there. It looks bad, but again, he deserves his day in court.
But see, he doesn't have anything to put that against. Maxwell's not going to tell the truth, and Epstein's not here to say one way or another what his involvement was. The records, you know, the financial records aren't really there much. I mean, I've got co-conspirator. Okay, so Epstein's in business doing all this stuff. Wes Wexner says, you know what, I don't mind investing some of this, because he invested everything.
Right.
And he does. And now all of a sudden, because he's Les Wexner, he's a co-conspirator. You see what I mean?
Well, and I think that's all Wexner
has
to do.
That could well be what it is.
Well, this, and we're getting toward the end here, but this is the thing with the Clintons right now. Because for the long time, Bill Clinton has been heavily associated with this. And the House Judiciary Committee, Oversight Committee, wanted them to come testify. And they said, we'll do it privately, but we don't want to do it. We don't want to be questioned. Well, okay, we don't like that. We want to subpoena you. Well, the Clintons have now said, okay, we'll answer the subpoena. We'll come. And they said, but let's do it on television. You think we've got something to hide, let's do it live on television. Put the cameras on, we got nothing to hide. Now they don't want to do it. Now they don't want to question them.
I don't think, if they're going to look at anything with the Clintons, I think that it should be over the Clinton Foundation, not over that. You know, I think there's more hay to be made in the Clinton Foundation than there is in Epstein Island.
But I just thought, isn't that the most
political.
Put a subpoena on these people.
That's our point today.
You
Scott.
Want right, but a subpoena, and when they say yes, we'll answer it. Put it all out there. Put it on television. Whatever you got, put it out there. And then they go, oh, wait a second. Let's not do that. Let's do this behind closed doors.
And for what? But we don't know the reasons for that. On either side. My point is, Scott, and I think the point, because we're wrapping up here, the point we're trying to make is that we could all sit down and be civil and talk about issues and not this constant attack.
Right.
You know, someone call in. Thank you, people, for not any. Did we get any nasty people?
No, not no nasty. No, just comments. Yeah, people listening.
You know, and they will. I don't believe you. So you're this and you're that. You know, I don't want to hear any of that. You know, I try to be reasonable with everyone, and you know, yeah, sure, I have a political slant. I should have a political slant because I have my own values and what I believe. But I'm not going to beat you up over yours. We're going to sit and talk about them.
From one of our listeners out there this morning, for the love of money is the root of all evils.
Yeah, they're right. Doesn't say money's the root of all evil. It says the love of money. And they are dead right.
They are right. And we'll be back next week.
Thanks, Scott.
All right. We're done. Stay tuned.
Wife, Charlotte Ray, Mrs. Garrett.
Is it how much of Mrs. Garrett is in Charlotte Ray?